a Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Award-winning tech entrepreneur, engineer, and evangelist Megan Smith served as the Chief Technology Officer of the United States under President Barack Obama for 3 years. She was the first female to serve in that role. Prior to that, Smith was a vice president of new business development at Google. Today, she's CEO of Shift7 and continues her efforts to get people to understand that technology is the key to the future and attract young people to careers in technology and engineering. Megan Smith will be presenting a lecture at the University of Dayton next Tuesday, April the 17th. I recently spoke with her and the director of the Innovation Center of the Design and Manufacturing Clinic at the University of Dayton, Associate Professor Rebecca Blust, about what they see as the future of technology. Megan Smith and Rebecca Blust, really nice to have you here today. Megan, you were the third person ever to hold the title Chief Technology Officer for the United States. What was the responsibilities of that position?
Yeah, it's a job that President Obama had created, and it continues on in. Congress has formalized it. But really, how do you help the president and his team harness the power of data, innovation, and technology on behalf of the American people? We were working, it's embedded together with the president's science advisor. And, you know, it's not a new idea that you have tech and science advising for a president. Certainly, President Washington and First State of the Union talks about, you know, there's nothing that better deserves your patronage than science and literature and knowledge. And so we've had this for a long time. But it's particularly case like thinking about digital and innovation and new ways of doing things. You know, even think about not just tech, but Wikipedia, like ways to collaborate. There was a real opportunity to help the president capacity build the government and capacity build the American people, and that was the focus of the job.
Well, how significant was it that that President Obama appointed a woman to the position, and for that matter, a gay woman to the position?
And also an engineer. So,
there was a bunch of firsts going on there.
But I think the idea, you know, the first person who came in and meeting CTO and each was really focused on policy technology, and we continued much of his work. So the kinds of topics we would focus on there were things like open source and open data. We opened 200,000 data sets across administration. Things like, you know, how your phone lets you see, you know, mapping and traffic data, those kinds of data. You could have all kinds of apps on top of government data to solve problems. Did a lot of work capacity building. Todd, who was second CTO, brought a lot of techies into government. So he started with President Obama, the Presidential Innovation Fellows, the United States Digital Service. He can have teams. This is a way to serve your country as a front-end or back-end engineer, you know, user interface designers, these kinds of characters. Having them, of course, governments have technical people like NASA and NIH and Department of Energy and such, but this is sort of at the executive level, have that kind of advising and that kind of capability came in. And then we continued that work, and then we added in what I called Innovation Nation, which is how do you get more American people into the kinds of fun tech jobs that matter for the future so that people are feeling confident and comfortable, and that was programs like Computer Science for All. How about all our kids learn coding at school during class time? 9 out of 10 parents want that. Or tech hire, you know, code boot camps and new paths to the future jobs. Those kinds of programs that we put together.
Just a technical question. Has President Trump continued this position?
Yes. The position itself is open, like the science advisor, but they continue the digital, you know, the digital upgrade. The United States Digital Service, many programs just continue. There's no CTO today, but there's a deputy CTO, and the Office of Science, Technology, Policy continues. There's a lot less people in it, and I'm hopeful. We really need science and technology. It's a critical need for companies, for our governments, you know, for any organization. And so I'm hopeful that they will put in the science advisor and the CTO at some point. But there are folks doing that work.
Okay. We'll come back to that in a little bit later. I want to go over to Becky Bluss from the University of Dayton. And you've been with the University of Dayton and the engineering school for some time. How have the demographics of your student body changed over time? Are they changing, and are they becoming more diverse, particularly in relationship to the involvement of women in engineering?
That is an excellent question. When I started at the University of Dayton 20 years ago, the number of female students in science and technology was right around 18%. So it was fairly low. We have pockets of increases relative to discipline-specific majors, but it has increased to about 26% recently. We have a huge thrust involving diversity and inclusion within the School of Engineering, so there is a big thrust to increase those numbers.
So, Megan, with your experience, and you've been on since leaving the Obama administration at the end of his term, you've been on this tech jobs tour trying to help people understand that a wider variety, a more diverse group of people ought to be interested in technology careers. What would you say about what it is that is the trigger to help women and minorities of other types, definitions, get involved in technology?
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge. Yeah, I found a company called Shift 7, and we team up in one of our projects, as you said, Tech Jobs Tour. We went to 25 different cities across the country. Think of like a career fair meets a revival, really fun in the evening across Appalachia, in Cleveland, and into Milwaukee and Cheyenne and Birmingham, all around. And the challenge is a lot of people have a stereotype and a confidence question, like, I don't think I belong in that job. And so we really need to change it. We have, in tech, for example, we have 600,000 jobs open in the United States. They're in every sector, from retail, manufacturing, health, ag, you name it. You know, everything gets digital to this point. And we don't need everyone to be purely coding, but we need fluency or, you know, sort of computer science skills, even if you were doing digital marketing or sales or user interface or art design and those things. And one of the things we found is that the jobs where we have the most openings in the United States are the ones where we have the most sort of stereotyped sexist or racist biases about who does what. You know, whether it's in tech where you think that's more of a men's job or nursing more of a women's job, car mechanics, et cetera. And we really have to break down those stereotypes. And so the more we can do to tell, not only make the curriculums welcome, which the University of Dayton team is doing a terrific job there, and I'm looking forward to being there and talking to the teams, the more we can make people know, for example, you guys are the home of Flagg, right? You're the Wright family Wright. People don't know that the Wright brothers' mother, Susan, was a mechanical genius. And so we reinforce it's just the boys. Well, actually, it was the whole family. And Susan taught her boys design thinking. There's a famous story about them on the ski hill at 10, where she taught them about them being able to eventually have the fastest sled. And her daughter, Catherine, of course, was like their Sheryl Sandberg COO. And we have to tell the whole stories and see that everybody in America has always been really good at these kinds of things so that people can have the confidence to come into these very high-paying jobs. They pay 50% more than the average American salary. We really need more Americans into them.
So telling the story of past diverse people in the process of innovation, entrepreneurship, technology is part of the way to talk about the future.
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so. We had a project with President Obama called Image of STEM, what you see on screen, what you see in Hollywood. It's 15-1 boy programmers to girl programmers in children's TV. Just because we have this bias and so Hollywood recreates that, people don't mean to do it, but they have the stereotypes. And it really hurts our young men and women because they think, oh, boys do this and girls don't, but that's not true. You know, some of the first computer scientists in the whole planet, Ada Lovelace, invented algorithms. Grace Hopper invented computer languages. You know, the first digital programmers in America were the ENIAC women 70 years ago, nearly lost history story. So we just know Ida B. Wells, an amazing data science journalist at the turn of the last century. Okay. Talented people.
Well, I want to ask Becky Blust a question based on Megan Smith's history. When I look at Megan's resume right after getting out of MIT, what you see is this whole series, Apple, Google, lots of other startups, lots of change It's not find the job that you're going to stay in the rest of your life. What do you tell your students about how they should think about crafting a career that is going to be successful in the tech area?
You know, it's interesting. I am very fortunate to be connected with our seniors as they are at the end of their studies at the University of
Dayton.
Weren't
you just telling me you were teaching a capstone course?
I am teaching a capstone course, which right now this time of year is very exciting. Lots of energy on the first floor of the Innovation Center. But our students, I'm fortunate in the fact that in this course, I enjoy teaching it because it is different every semester. And, you know, for the last 15 years of these students' education, they have been taught a certain way of being approached and understanding information and acquiring an answer. And the answer has always been in the back of the textbook. There has been a right answer and there are wrong answers. And so our students in the capstone course, they're understanding that there are a variety of different opportunities and options in order to be successful and finding out there could be an option that is very successful, but it could be very expensive. But there could be a B option that our students could implement that would handle all the issues for the client. And be, you know, and handle a lot more of the attributes that are critically important. So, one of the things we like to approach upon our students is the fact that your education doesn't learn. Your thirst for learning doesn't stop when you graduate and you receive your diploma. It is a continual cycle, which is obvious when you look at Megan's resume that, you know, she did not look at her first opportunity, her first job position as the final endeavor. And I think that's critical.
Megan, when you got out of MIT, you graduated from MIT with your second degree.
Yep.
How did you think about your career at that point versus today looking back on your career?
Yeah, I would have never predicted all the different amazing things that I ended up getting to be part of and incredible people. But I think in a lot of ways, I was just talking to Dr. Sharon Grotta, who is part of the faculty also, and she was noting, I got to take acoustics from Professor Bose, who's the amazing Bose speakers. And one of the pieces of advice he gave to us is to follow your passion. You know, if you're passionate about something, you're just going to do a better job. You're going to follow that. And I think it's a great set of advice for students. And I was able to work on things that were really incredible with extraordinary people. And I guess that would be my advice to others. And that's sort of more what I followed. And I also think in a lot of ways, engineering, people don't really think of engineering and technology as service-based, but it really has a lot of heart in it, you know, a lot of love in it, that you can think about not only science and tech as the wonder and curiosity components and discovery and sort of that very kind of think about a child and discovery, but also service. What can you do with heroic engineering? How can you solve problems, help other people? And make things better? And how can you have good community? I love the capstone classes that you guys are taking. I love that the engineering departments have these project-based team, you know, it's a team sport in life. And getting the engineering students to really do hands-on, applied, active learning, which is the best way to learn. And you have to do the business planning and the engineering and the teamwork and stay up late and all the crazy prototyping. And it's the best experience you can do. And being in those kinds of situations in school and then getting in them, you know, in your career is an extraordinary opportunity for folks.
Well, Becky, you're at the Innovation Center at University of Dayton, where you're trying to connect your teams of your students to real life challenges that companies or organizations bring to you. And that's sort of, I think, what Megan was just talking about. Can you give some examples where, you know, you might say that the Innovation Center has fulfilled the image that she was just presenting?
Absolutely. And we not only we do what's called the bookends, right? So we have an EGR 103, which is an engineering innovation course. And we found that – and then we have our senior capstone. What we found was – we didn't want to wait until senior year to expose our students to open-ended problem solving. We wanted to front load that in an engineering innovation course for first-year engineering students. So every student in the School of Engineering takes the engineering innovation course. And they work on, it's funny Megan mentioned, they work on service learning projects. And it really does engage and put a platform together that is a level platform with our female and male students surrounding those issues. Women have a tendency to want to focus on a lot of humanity-centered, human-centered design issues. And, you know, it's an exceptional result when they're finished.
Heroic engineering?
Heroic engineering.
That's I love that term. One of the things that I found on your new company, Megan.
Shift 7.
Shift 7. Yeah. One of the things I found on.
By the way, Shift 7 means an and on a keyboard. If you type shift and 7, you get and. So it's 7 billion people, 7 oceans, 7 continents. Let's go. How about? Include everyone.
You guys are so tricky. One of the things I found on your site, though, as I was reading it and perusing it, was this statistic. 60% of the tech talent is coming out of boot camps and vocational schools.
Isn't that amazing?
Not out of universities.
The coders. Yeah, into coding. They're graduating. 23,000 people are going to graduate from different kinds of pathways. These 3 months to 12-month short code boot camps that people are taking. Some are paid, some are unpaid, some are online, some are embedded in community colleges. But it's a really exciting addition to the components that are there.
What do you think that says about what's necessary and what's sufficient to get a person into the entry level of this field?
You know, it's interesting because I really appreciate what you're saying about the first years. You know, making sure that you got hands-on, active learning all the way through, whether it's from kindergarten on up, we should be doing engineering and STEM and STEAM, let's call it, because you want the arts in there with our kids all the time. You don't go into the PE class and you hand out books to kids and say, hey, start reading, we're doing baseball today, right? You play baseball and you learn it, and even though maybe the first years aren't so good at baseball, eventually get better by doing it, and the coaching and the practice and that, you know, the theory comes in with that. And the same thing with science and technology. If you can really do it in a project-based way, as a teaching laboratory, you know, as a teaching engineering, it's a much better experience for everybody involved. And so, you know, the same thing is true of coding and computer science and computational thinking. The more you can weave it in, even today I was talking to somebody, you know, you're in an English class, maybe click edit on Wikipedia and see the script code behind a language arts thing that you're looking at. So think about digital as something that's enhancing all the subjects. And with this kind of stuff, the sooner we can get people practical skills and hands-on experience, the more likely they're to stay with the subject. You know, they may do a coding class, they may go on to do a computer science degree, an engineering degree. Well, they're also doing work study because they can make some money and get paid a lot, you know, for the coding work.
Becky Bluss from the University of Dayton, that same figure, 60% of tech talent coming out of boot camps and vocational schools. What's that say to you from your perspective?
You know, that is a challenging and scary statistic, to be perfectly honest with you. However, I do think that's the new replacement for some of the blue-collar work that we have done in the past, right? So this is the evolution of the workforce coming up to and utilizing and enhancing and embracing technology, because it is a part of everything that we do now. So I think it is part of getting our workforce geared up, but it certainly levels the playing field.
Megan Smith, you have a lot of interest in diversifying the backgrounds of people who enter engineering, tech, et cetera, et cetera. What can you say about the effectiveness of retraining programs for people who have been displaced from other jobs, whether factory jobs or whatever? Realistically, how effective are retraining programs in taking a person who doesn't have a tech orientation to begin with and putting them into a coding class or something similar to get started?
Yeah, you know, humans are naturally curious. We can work on, you know, the world keeps evolving, and it's really important that we keep building people's confidence around their ability to come into these new jobs. I think it's critically important to find out what someone is interested in and draw from that background, rather than saying, you know, why don't you do this thing that you're not interested in? It's hard to learn something that you're not passionate about. And so one of the things you think that, you know, tech and coding and engineering, these can be applied to any subject. So, you know, let's say that you've been doing, you know, in the area of policing, there's justice technologies, in the area of hunger, in the area of poverty, in the area of aerodynamics, more of an engineering and transportation. So whatever the topic, there's a way to apply something. So finding out what folks are interested in and then pulling them into these new capabilities, I sometimes call it kind of play the whole orchestra, you know, learn to play these other tools on the problems that you want to be part of solving.
One of the other aspects of this is the whole question of the diversity of the workplace in tech areas. Silicon Valley, and Megan, you have had lots of experience in Silicon Valley, has really gotten some criticism for the lack of opportunity for women on a not the few or not ones who just rise to the top, but the ordinary person who's entering. What do you say about that? What has to change in the workplace to make all this work out?
Yeah, this is a critical issue. And the tech companies, you know, there's a lot of bias about who gets opportunities and who gets to move forward, who gets venture capital funding. Worked a bunch with Steve Casey's on the Rise of the Rest tours. You know, 90% of venture capital is going to men, 75% to specific regions of the country, so Silicon Valley, Boston, and New York, and 1% to African-American founders. We got talent. I mean, Ohio is full of talent. Like, why should you get what Silicon Valley gets in a week in one whole year, right? So how do we spread out the treasure? How do we broaden the agenda? And how do we make the voice? So I think seeing that most people of all different walks of life have contributed through science and technology, whether it's George Washington Carver, who, you know, really saved the country from malnutrition and began what became Ag Extension, or Clara Barton and her innovation and operations and what became Red Cross, you know, Ida B. Wells using data science and journalism to stop us from lynching people, you know, and really incredible justice innovation. Jane Addams won the Nobel Peace Prize for inventing social work and used lots of data in figuring out the Chicago, you know, industrial age neighborhoods and other things. So, you know, figuring out how to broaden and pull people into this work is critical, applying it to all different areas, and welcoming people in is essential. And the bias that Silicon Valley has had, this idea of pattern mapping, you know, since this particular person did well, I'll find someone just like them. Oh, you look like me. You know, it's really got to stop. A lot of people, a lot of the diversity work there in spite of the companies. Now they're finally waking up and starting to do that work. And we're seeing like Intel and Slack and others making progress. Others still have a long way to go, but it's essential. And it matters even more now that we're getting into AI, because algorithms can really systemically entrench this bias and make it even more unfair. So we've got a lot of work to do.
Becky, are your students women students, minority students? Is this an area of real concern for them?
That is a good question. I'm sure that it is not as much. The students that are interested and that are excited to work in this field are definitely, it's a concern to them. Around Dayton, part of the thrust is to keep some of our graduates local in the Dayton community. It's nice to be in the Midwest. There's a lot of reasons why we want to develop that. We find that a lot of our students are, you know, supporting the local community in Dayton, and they want to stay there. They've developed relationships there. They've got camaraderies there. We have the University of Dayton Research Institute. They have their faculty. It's a great community for these resources and for them to launch their businesses. But as Megan said, there is a lot of talent that is not being mined right now.
Final. There's talent sitting on the bench, and you got to pull it in, because And especially exciting, I love that, because you're talking about what's so cool and amazing in the United States is having been on the Tech Jobs Tour. We're just up in Idaho to see America's rising. And so everywhere you go, people are really doing extraordinary work. And so people want to live where they're from. And so using the digital technologies and the networks to really be connected as innovators is a real opportunity. And so it's great to see what Ohio folks are up to. And certainly Dayton has incredible resources with the university and all the different centers and companies and organizations around to build on.
Megan, I'm going to cycle back to where we started. As your role as Chief Technology Officer for the United States, right now we're faced with what's happening in Congress with the testimony of Mark Zuckerberg about the question of security and privacy. How important is it that Congress and the president have good advice about what kinds of policy they need to draft moving forward?
It's essential. I sort of think of these things as Navy SEALs teams. You know, you need all the different types of capabilities. And we used to call it TQ, Tech IQ. Leaving TQ out of the room is a mistake. It doesn't mean that you don't also need your economist and your lawyer and your operator and your, you know, arts and literature, all the different skills, communicators. But why would you tie your hand behind your back? So, you know, and try to do things. So it's very important to have technical people involved together with that whole cross-cut, humanities people, privacy. Tim Cook just gave the commencement speech at MIT, and he was talking to them about don't leave the room as technical folks when we get into privacy. And those are topics, you know, that you think are humanities topics. These are topics that are very multidimensional and require a lot of complexities. We're in a bit of an arms race. These wonderful technologies for community have also been weaponized by Russians and others. And so we need to be really mindful to protect ourselves and our families and communities and our country together. And Americans are up for that. And we're good at this. We invented these technologies. You know, I don't think people would have anticipated what occurred. But now that it has, you know, we need to team up together as others have in generations before to be really forward-leaning and really cross-functional about solving these problems and being very clear and transparent about what we believe in, what our values, what our core American values are. And talking about the Midwest, I can give like, that is America at the core, and that's what we want to see. And so I'm hopeful that they continue to pull the tech folks into those conversations.
Okay. I want to thank Megan Smith, the former Chief Technology Officer of the United States, who's going to be speaking on Tuesday, April the 17th in Dayton, and also Becky Bluss, the Director of Innovation Center and Design and Manufacturing Clinic at the University of Dayton, for this wonderful conversation this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next.